Hello, weirdos. I'm Marissa Blackwood, and welcome to All Things Murder. Welcome to All Things Murder, the show that dives into real true crime cases that were inspired by pop culture movies and shows we all know today. I'm Marissa Blackwood, and in today's episode, we're going to be talking about Damien Echols and the West Memphis Three, and how this particular case inspired our beloved Eddie Munson from Stranger Things. Listener's discretion is advised. So Damien Echols was born on December 11th, 1974. He was originally born Michael Wayne Hutchinson, but then around age 13, he changed his last name, taking on that of his stepfather, Jack Echols. Damien's parents moved around a lot after their divorce when he was 8, and Damien nearly attended 8 different schools by the time he was just 10. So it was said, like Eddie Munson, Damien had habits of dressing in black and listening to heavy metal music and was just a misfit within the local community. His family settled in West Memphis, Arkansas, where he was still in the 9th grade at the age of 17, where he met his close friend Jason Baldwin and Jesse Miss Kelly Jr. Damien Echols, Jesse Miss Kelly Jr., and Jason Baldwin were 3 men convicted as teenagers in 1994 of the 1993 murders of 3 boys in West Memphis, Arkansas. The victims were 8-year-old boys Steve Edward Branch, Christopher Mark Byers, and James Michael Moore. They were all second graders at Weber Elementary School. Each had just achieved the rank of wolf in the local Cub Scout pack, and they were all best friends. So, like Eddie Munson again, prosecutors said the teenagers killed the children as part of a satanic ritual, and that Echols had been the ringleader. On May 5th, 1993, the 3 8-year-old boys Steve, Michael, and Christopher were reported missing in West Memphis, Arkansas by Christopher's adoptive father, John Mark Byers, around 7 p.m. Now, the boys were reportedly last seen on Robin Hood Hills by 3 neighbors who, in affidavits, told of seeing them playing together around 6:30 p.m., the evening they disappeared, and seeing Steve Branch's stepfather, Terry Hobbs, calling them in to come home. On May 6th at 8 a.m., the Crittenden County Search and Rescue canvassed all of West Memphis, but obviously focused primarily on Robin Hood Hills, where the boys were last reported seen. Now, everyone was searching and searching, shoulder-to-shoulder search, but they had no sign of the missing boys. Until around 1:45 p.m., an officer spotted a boy's black shoe floating in the muddy creek, which led them to do the drainage of the canal, which revealed a ditch with all 3 of the boys' bodies. They had all been stripped naked and were hogtied with their own shoelaces. Now, if you don't know what hogtying means, it means that their right ankles were tied to the right wrist behind their back, the same with the left side. Now, their clothing was found in the creek, some of it twisted around sticks and just thrown into the muddy ditch bed. Most of their clothing was turned inside out. 2 pairs of the boys' underwear was never recovered. And Christopher Byers was the only victim who had lacerations to various parts of his body and was mutilated of his scrotum and penis. The West Memphis police initially suspected the boys had been raped. However, expert testimony disputed this finding. They did find trace amounts of sperm DNA that were found on a pair of pants recovered from the scene. Experts would claim Byers' wounds were the result of a knife attack and that he had been purposely castrated by the murderer. Defense experts claim that the injuries were most likely the result of post-mortem animal predation. Police believe the boys were assaulted and killed at the location where they were found, while many people would argue that they happened somewhere else. Our suspects. Baldwin and Echols had been arrested previously for vandalism and shoplifting, and Miss Kelly just had a reputation of anger and just was engaging in fistfights with teenagers at school for no reason. Early in the investigation, police looked at 2 other suspects, Chris Morgan and Brian Holland, who both had a long history of drug charges and both abruptly left to Oceanside, California, just 4 days after the bodies were found.
Interesting.
On May 17th, 1993, both boys were arrested and took a polygraph that indicated deception when they denied any and all involvement in the murders. During subsequent questioning, Morgan claimed he did have a long history of drug and alcohol use, along with blackouts and memory lapses. He claimed that he might have killed the victims, but quickly recanted his part of the statement. Now, California police sent blood and urine samples from both of the boys to the West Memphis Police Department, but after the police department investigated, they had to cut the suspects loose because they could not find any traces to lead them to the crime scene. Enter Mr. Bojangles. On the evening of May 5th, 1993, at just 8:42 p.m., workers in the Bojangles restaurant, located about a mile from the crime scene in Robin Hood Hills, reported seeing a black male who seemed mentally disoriented from inside the restaurant's ladies' room. He was bleeding and he had a bruise against the restroom walls, and police responded to a call and didn't even bother to check the restrooms. They didn't even check the restrooms. If you get a call about a crazy guy who is bleeding and is in a woman's restroom, wouldn't you investigate that? I'm just saying. So the day after the victim's bodies were found, Bojangles manager Marty King, thinking there was a possible connection to the bloody man found in the bathroom and a bloody crime scene that followed, reported the incident to police officers, who finally inspected the ladies' room. A little late for that, don't you think? The man reportedly wore a blue cast type brace on his arm that had white Velcro on it. So if he had his arm wrapped in a cast, it would have made it very difficult for him to tie up and murder three young boys. The manager, King, gave the officers a pair of sunglasses he thought the man had left behind, and the detectives did take some blood samples from the walls and tiles of the restroom. Police Detective Bryn Ridge testified that he later lost those blood scrapings. Oh yeah, he lost it. Oh, and get this. So a hair from the crime scene was identified to belong to a black male that was wrapped around one of the victims in a sheet.
Well, what good is that now? We don't have anything to match it to.
The police felt that the crime had cult overtones, and Damien Eccles might be a suspect because he, at the time, had an interest in occultism, and the arresting officer felt that Eccles was just capable of murdering children. The police interviewed Eccles on May 7th, 2 days after the bodies were discovered. Now, he did take a polygraph examination, and he denied any involvement. So the polygraph examiner exclaimed that Eccles' chart indicated deception. On May 9th, during a formal interview by Detective Bryn Ridge, Eccles mentioned that one of the victims had wounds to the genitals. Now, police saw this as incriminating since they did not release that information to the public. Police continued to interrogate and investigate Damien for about a month, but they had no evidence linking him to the crimes. Enter Vicki Hutchinson. Vicki Hutchinson was a new resident of West Memphis, and she would play a very important role in this investigation. Even though later on she would recant her testimony, you know, claiming that her statements were fabricated in part due to coercion from police. On May 6, 1993, before the victims were found later that same day, Vicki came in and took a polygraph exam by Detective Don Bray at the Marion Police Department. It was to determine whether or not she had stolen money from one of her employers. So as she was doing her polygraph at the station, she had her son with her, Aaron. And Aaron was a friend of the victims. And he claimed that he had witnessed the murders committed by Satanists who spoke Spanish at the, quote, playhouse. The police are thinking that they just got a breakthrough in the case. So they investigated and they came to the conclusion that Aaron's inconsistent story, and they also found no playhouse location. Aaron could not even identify the West Memphis Three. But a police officer did leak the portions of Aaron's statement to the press, contributing the growing belief that the murders were indeed part of a satanic ritual. Around June 1st, 1993, Vicki agreed with police to a sting operation where she would place hidden microphones in her home to get the dirt on Damien. Miss Kelly agreed to introduce the two of them. Now, during their conversation, Vicki reported that Damien made no incriminating statements. So they have no evidence. They have no confession. On June 2nd, 1993, Vicki told police about two weeks after the murders were committed, that she, Eccles, and Miss Kelly attended a Wiccan meeting in Terrell, Arkansas. She claimed at the meeting that Damien got so drunk and that he was just openly bragging about killing the three young boys. Miss Kelly was first questioned on June 3rd, 1993,
which was a day after Vicky's purported confession. So at the time when they were questioning her further about it, she was unable to recall the location of this Wiccan meeting, and she did not name any other participants in the so-called meeting. Vicky was never charged with theft. She later claimed she had implicated Damien and Miss Kelly just to avoid facing criminal charges and to obtain a reward for the discovery of the murders. On June 3rd, police interrogated Jesse Miss Kelly Jr., who did have a mental disorder and was a minor. Okay? Police questioned a minor without his parents for roughly 12 hours. And only 46 minutes of that entire interrogation was actually recorded. All of the no, people. If you are a minor, please know this, that you cannot be questioned without a parent in the room. Whatever statement that you give to police officers without a parent present is a huge no-no. No-no. So, Miss Kelly recanted his statement and said he was scared of the police and claimed coercion, fatigue, and threats from the police. Shortly after his first confession, police arrested Damien and his close friend, Baldwin. Now, 8 months after his original confession on February 17th, 1994, Jesse Miss Kelly made another statement to police. I'm sorry, it's not fun, but it is funny. Ignoring his lawyer's advice, and he confessed into details how the boys were abused and then murdered. The trial. Now, Miss Kelly was tried separately, and Eccles and Baldwin were tried together in 1994. Under the Bruton rule, Miss Kelly's confessions could not be admitted against his co-defendants. That's why he was tried separately. All three defendants pleaded not guilty. Now, during Miss Kelly's trial, Richard Oshie, who was an expert on false confessions and police coercion, testified that the brief recording of Jesse's interrogation was a classic example of police coercion. Critics also stated that Jesse's various so-called confessions were in many respects inconsistent with each other, as well as the particulars of the crime scene and the murder victims. Like, for example, one of his so-called admissions was that Miss Kelly saw Damien actually rape one of the boys. Now, remember back earlier when I said they did find no forensic evidence indicating that the boys had been raped. Now, on February 5th, 1994, Miss Kelly was convicted by a jury of one count of first-degree murder and two counts of second-degree murder. The court sentenced him to life plus 40 years in prison. 3 weeks later, Eccles and Baldwin went on trial. The prosecution accused all three of the boys of committing a satanic murder. The prosecution even called Dale W. Griffiths, who is a graduate from Columbia Pacific University and was a so-called expert in the occult, testified that, oh yeah, those murders, definitely part of a satanic ritual. Like he was there or something. On March 19th, 1994, Damien and Baldwin were found guilty on all three counts of murder. Baldwin was sentenced to life in prison and Damien sentenced to death. The West Memphis Three spent many years on death row until their convictions were eventually overturned following a retrial in 2010. They were saved by DNA technology, which had not previously existed back then, that presented new evidence, thus exonerating them. All three of the men were released on the same day.
New evidence.
So the first Paradise Lost feature, which if you don't know what that is, it's a movie based on this case specifically on the Memphis Three. Now, when they were filming the first feature, John Mark Byers, you know, the adoptive father of Chris Byers, gave a knife to one of the cameramen, Doug Cooper, and Cooper informed his producers of his receipt of the knife back in December 19th of 1993. After the documentary crew returned back to New York, the crew noticed what to appear to be blood on the knife. HBO executives immediately ordered them to return that knife to the West Memphis Police Department, and the knife was not received until January 8, 1994. Like, what took so long? Byers initially claimed that the knife had never been used. However, after the blood found matched both his and Chris's blood type, he was like, I don't have no idea how that blood ended up there. I don't know. So during interrogation, West Memphis police suggested, I'm gonna say that again. The West Memphis police suggested to Byers that he may have left the knife out accidentally. And Byers was like, oh, yeah, exactly. That's what happened. Oh yeah, he agreed with that. He would later say that he may have cut his thumb, but when they did further testing on the knife, it proved inconclusive results about the source of the blood. Now, they did make him do a polygraph, and he passed. But according to the documentary crew, they indicated that he was also under the influence of, like, several psychoactive prescription medications that could have affected his results. Another thing of new evidence is there were teeth marks on Steve Branch's forehead. Now, the West Memphis Three, they all submitted imprints of their teeth, and none were a match. Jean-Marc Byers just so happened to have his teeth removed in 1997 after the first trial, but before an imprint could be made. Suspicious. He, of course, had a reason for this, saying that the seizure medication he was taking gave him periodontal disease and that he planned the removal because of other kind of dental problems that were giving him issues for years. It's my teeth, man. After an expert examined autopsy photos and noted what he might have been an imprint of a belt buckle on Byers' corpse, John Byers, the elder Byers, revealed that, you know, he may have spanked his stepson just before he disappeared. This guy has an alibi for everything, it seems. In 2007, DNA collected from the crime scene was tested. So none was found a match to the West Memphis Three guys. A hair was not consistent with Steve Branch's stepfather, Terry Hobbs, who found tied into the knots used to bind in one of the victims. Interesting. Prosecutors claimed the DNA evidence did not tie Hobbs to the murder, but they did find that one hair was consistent with the hair of Terry's friend, David Jacoby. On May 5th, 2009, Pamela Hobbs, who is Terry Hobbs' now ex-wife, made a statement saying, quote, "Additionally, after the murders, my sister Jolynn McCauley and I found in Terry's nightstand a knife that Stevie carried with him constantly and which I believe was with him when he died. It was a pocket knife that my father had given to Stevie, and Stevie loved that knife. I had been shocked that the police did not find it with Stevie when they found his body. I had always assumed that my son's murderer had taken the knife during the crime. I could not believe it was in Terry's things. He had never told me that he had it. Also, my sister Jolynn told me, she told me that she saw Terry wash clothes, bed linens, and curtains from Stevie's room at an odd time." In 2013, written statements from two men, Billy Wayne Stewart and Benny Guy, were introduced in the court. Now, they both claimed to have information linking Terry Hobbs to the murders, and the police ignored them at first. They ignored them. Oh, infuriating. After being denied a retrial and multiple appeals on August 19, 2011, Eccles, Baldwin, and Miss Kelly were all released from prison as part of an Alford plea deal. Now, an Alford plea deal is basically a legal mechanism that where a defendant who pleads guilty is still inserting their actual innocence, basically making the prosecutor do their homework to find any evidence that could take their asses back to jail. So if they find any evidence, your ass is going back. As part of the plea deal, the three men cannot pursue civil action against the state for wrongful imprisonment, which is such a load of bullshit. Because on August 19, 2011, Judge Leaser sentenced them to time served, which was a total of 18 years and 78 days. And they were each given a suspended sentence of 10 years. Now, if they were to reoffend, they would be sent back to prison for 21 years, but luckily all three of the men were released on the same day. The West Memphis 3 case still remains unsolved, and police never filed charges for Terry Hobbs or his friend, David Jacoby, who was never even considered a suspect. As for the DNA hairs found from both of the men, the police department interviewed Terry, who was dismissive of the findings, claiming the hair could have been picked up during a visit to his home since the victim played with our little boy all the time. Now, David told a Memphis NBC affiliate that the only reason they found his DNA hairs at the crime scene is because he used to walk around where the bodies were found with the kids and with Terry, but he didn't wear hats back then, that his hair could have just blown around everywhere. That is the worst defense ever. In 2009, three witnesses filed affidavits claiming they saw Terry with the murdered boys the night they disappeared, contradicting Terry's previous statement to police. Now, Terry denied seeing the boys that night and questioned why even these eyewitnesses are coming up 16 years later.
It was also revealed in 2012 that Terry's own nephew would tell his friends, yeah, my Uncle Terry, he murdered those three little boys. And he also claimed that the killings were a Hobbs family secret. Terry, of course, denied this accusation, saying that his family does have secrets, but none of them have to do with murder.
Sure. So who actually did kill the boys? Because remember, this case is still unsolved. Could it have been Terry Hobbs and his friend David Jacoby? Or perhaps this mysterious Mr. Bojangles, like no one even bothered to really investigate after? Nobody knows. And that concludes today's episode. Rest in peace to the poor victims. Thank you guys so much for joining me. I am Marissa Blackwood, and tune in next week for a new All Things Murder, if you dare. If you're a fan of horror movies or true crime, or perhaps both like myself, don't forget to like and subscribe, and don't forget to check out my TikTok at Sinister Marissa.